I'm going to actually take, I think it's explain the first parak myself. I'm going to take just a little more on than usual in the Chazara and explain it clear. I won't be, of course, adding as much as I would normally add, because we haven't got 45 minutes, but I want to at least explain it minimally, fully, and clearly, so that also for you and also for me, because I thought I would do a recording, but I didn't get a chance, so I'm going to use this as the recording for the website, because people are using that for the first chapter of the Ma'ariv, and anyone's listening to the tape, so don't panic that the first segment, the first chapter in the Chazara, and the first chapter in the recording is identical, just for this one parak. You shouldn't panic that we didn't. So we're talking, we're starting in Maseches de Ma'ariv, parak Rishon, the first chapter of Mishnah Aleph, the first Mishnah. Okay, so the word de Ma'ariv, just for the background, means literally, what is this? What is that? Duh, this, my, what is it? Because it refers to produce that we're uncertain about whether the proper hafrashas, the proper tithes, were taken from it. The Gemara in Sota Memches says that Yochanan Kohen Gadol did a survey in his time at the beginning of Bayasheni to see whether or not Amoratzim actually take hafrashas. He found that most of them do, and essentially all of them do take Truma Gedola, but when it comes to the other Maestras, it's not so certain that all of them do. So he said that at a suffix, anyone who's an Am Aretz, meaning by definition someone who isn't formally committed to doing the proper afrashas, so we have to treat their food as damai, and we have to take, it has certain leniencies, because they probably did indeed take it, this food probably is properly tithed, but in case it wasn't, we have to remove certain parts of it again. Specifically, we have to get rid of the miser, trumas miser, because the trumas miser actually has the status of like truma, it belongs to the kohen. I'm going to carry with it, according to everyone, a misa b'day shemaim. Now, the Amoratzim apparently didn't think that it was critical to get rid of the trumas miser if they didn't take miser first. So they figured if miser wasn't taken yet, it hadn't become trumas miser, but indeed it's not true. So we have to get rid of that. And also there's miser sheni, the second tithe, which has to go to Jerusalem, since that food has to be eaten b'tahara. So you have to redeem the kedusha of the miser sheni out of the my produce onto a coin, mesefik, so that you'll be able to eat the food properly. The other hafashas, specifically miser, and when relevant, Maeser Ani, those are really financial obligations, and therefore we have a principle, Hamoti Mechavero Alav Haraya, who wants to take something from his friend has to bring proof that the burden of proof is on him to show that it belongs to him, let's call him the plaintiff. So in this case, since it's a demai, no one will know, and no one can know whether or not it really is there, the Maeser and the Maeser Ani, so the levy or the poor person will not be able to bring evidence, so you, as the owner, are allowed to eat it. Okay, I'm not going to go, if I would have given this shiur normally, I would have gone through the whole system of hafrashos from beginning to end, but that's all I'm saying for now, because we're doing a half chazara and half first time for the first parak. There's no obvious structure to demai, as far as I can tell, so I can't really give you much of a guide there. And as far as halach lemaisa, apparently the Chazon Ish says that all of demai doesn't really apply b'zman hazeh, because it's just not sociologically true. What Yochanan Kohen Gadol found in Bayasheni, that most Amoratzim, you know, they did, but they didn't. It's just not the case today. Today, either people do or they don't. And it's so if you bought something from a person who is dubious, have taken a freshness, you'd be taking a freshness under the normal halachas of Safek or Vade, whatever it would be. Okay. Fine, very good. So now, the first Mishnah deals with produce that is exempt from the halachas of demai, the halachas of demai. It's actually a machlokas, exactly what's referring to in the Gemara. We're going like Rish Lakish. We're talking just about demai throughout the whole parak, and we're going to be allowed to eat these foods because they really typically hefker. These are like invaluable foods that are not valuable, and therefore most of them are just grown wildly. And as we learned in Peah, food that grows wild is exempt from the madnas naniyim. So here, although we don't know for sure whether or not it came from an ani who tended to a crop, but probably it didn't. And yesterday, someone asked about sfeik sfeika, and I was trying to think, I was like saying, I'm sure we'd learned it, but I couldn't remember where, now I see why, because it's in the first parak, which we didn't learn together. So I'm gonna explain the concept of sfeik sfeika very briefly here, because this is the sfeik sfeika that we've seen so far. Sfeik sfeika means, like, we'll translate it as a double doubt. And the halacha is, when it comes to you have a double doubt, the sfeik sfeika, you are allowed to be lenient. So there's two doubts here nested one on top of the other. The first is, we're not even sure that this is, that this food is chayiv in Maaseres, because it's probably from Hefker. So it's a doubt. If there was ever an obligation to tie this, that's called a suffix. It's a suffix of this stuff. Right? We're not sure if it came from most Hefker stuff, or if it came from the meat, the minority that would be required in Demai, in Hefrashas, excuse me. And on top of that, even if it did come from produce that was obligated in Hefrashas, we have a second suffix, which is maybe the Amaratim Amarats who tended to it didn't take the Hefrashas. That's what we said. We said most of them do. So you have a suffix number one, if it was even obligated, and even if it was, you have a suffix number two, well, maybe the guy did it. That's called a sfeik sfeika, like a double doubt. And in such a case, you're allowed to be lenient. And the poor fellow who wanted to hear the Pshat and Sfeik Sfeika is walking the door, so I've listened to the tape. Okay, so here are the actual particular fruits that are exempt. Hakalin sheba demai, the things which are lenient, makel and demai, in other words, you don't need to take the hafrashas mesafik with these foods if they were bought from an amaretz. Hashisin, wild figs, varimin, lotus fruits, vuzradin, sorb apples, vnos shuach, white figs, vnos shikma, sycamore figs, vnovlos, vnovlos hatamara. We actually had this in the sixth parak of brachas, remember? Things, these are like they fell from the tree early. Vagufnin, these are grapes that didn't ripen properly, so you left them till late. You didn't pick them the first time around, they're like late harvesting, late ripening grapes, and they're second quality. Vahanitpa, capers, fine. Ubi Yehuda, and in Yehuda, there are other foods which I guess in general are considered not very valuable. Amongst them, ha'og, that's sumac fruit. We also saw it in the peah. Ba'chometz shebe Yehuda, and the chometz, the vinegar of Yehuda. Now the pshat here is, the base of Mikdash was situated in Yehuda territory, and there was a special nace that happened when the base of Mikdash was standing, that the vinegar wouldn't go bad. Excuse me, the wine that they used in the base of Mikdash, the wine that grew in Yehuda wouldn't go bad as a miracle because of its use in the base of Mikdash. So all wine never went bad in Yehuda as a miracle when the temple stood. So they couldn't make vinegar from wine because it wouldn't go bad. So in Yehuda, when the temple stood, instead to make vinegar, what they used is something called temed, which basically means temed, which basically they took like the grape skins, the grape seeds, and then like they fermented that to make wine. And it's really secondary quality. I think arak from aniseed. But anyways, so whatever it is, this temed is like it's low quality stuff. And so again, either they got it from Hefker or in the first place, people abandoned their grape seeds, or alternatively, it's so worthless that they didn't bother taking the hafrasha from it. Okay, but Bizman. Even once the base of Mikdash was destroyed in Yehuda, that didn't apply anymore, and certainly today. But kusbar is coriander. That's what was described in Rashi there about what the man looked like. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. That was in the land of Yehuda, the region of Yehuda. This is Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Kol hashisin paturin. He says, yeah, I agree that all shisin we saw before, those wild figs, they're exempt. Chutz mishel dufra, except for from a fig tree that produces two crops per year. Those are more valuable, and those kind of figs wouldn't be left in Hefker. And also, kol arimin paturin, all like the lotus fruits are also patur, I agree. Chutz merime shikmona, except for the lotus fruits that come from Shikmona, it's a place near Haifa. I guess they're very nice over there, high quality. And kol beno shikma paturos, and same goes this sycamore fig, fruit, are exempt, he agrees. Chutz mishel hamustafos, except for those which like burst open, those I guess are extra tasty and people harvest those and then leave them to Hefker. But the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Fine. Okay, now Mishnah base deals with the leniencies of the Maaser Sheni that's embedded inside the Demai. Right, Maaser Sheni has a number of halachas. We've seen this a few times already. It has to be eaten in Jerusalem, it has to be eaten in Tahara. If you can redeem it, then you have to add a chomesh to it. It can't be eaten when you're an onen. That means when you're in the first day that a person's karov relative dies, and the night also midorban, you can't eat maaser sheni. And then there's also you have to destroy it in year 3 and year 6, And when you do destroy, it's the Bior, excuse me, I should really say it, the after year 3 and after year 6, which means before Pesach and year 4 and year 7. And when you do destroy it, you have a special declaration you say, you know, I did everything exactly like you told me to do it. A special, it's called Vidui Maestros. Okay, so there's many leniences when it comes to the Demai of, to the Maestros Sheni that comes out of Demai. So, Hadamai, the Maestro Sheni of Damai, Ein Lo Chomesh, it doesn't require adding the fifth part, i.e. 25%, because even Midoraisa, adding the Chomesh is not Ma'akev. In other words, if you, we saw already in Peah, if you redeem the Kedusha of Maestro Sheni onto a coin, but you don't add the Chomesh, it still works. It works. You owe another 25%, but it didn't. 25%? 25%? I know. Because Chomesh translates as a fifth, we discussed it before, it means a fifth part. If you have, if it's worth $4, you have to add a fifth dollar to it. That's a pshat. Okay? So, Ve'ein lo biur, there's no obligation of biur, that's the destroying it in the fourth and seventh year of the cycle. Ve'ne'achal la'onen, and an onen, someone who's lost his relative in that first day, is allowed to eat demai, again, because we're treating it as doubtful, that it's a... was obligated anyway because most Amoratim do take Dafrashas. V'nichnes v'yushalayim v'yotzi. This is a separate lahalacha. It means you can bring it into Jerusalem, it can go into Jerusalem and it can come out again. Because when it comes to Maaser Sheni, normally we say there's a funny lesson that the walls of Jerusalem like are kolet, like they hold on to the Maaser Sheni. Meaning once it's in, you know, it's like a lobster trap, can't come out again. But that's not true when it comes to Demai, where Mekel, you're actually allowed to take it out of the walls and bring it back in the second time. Abden es mi'utu bedrachim, and although when it comes to Maaser Sheni of Vadai, you have to protect every last drop of it, even if you were under pressure or you might have lost it, you have to look for it very stringently. Here, if a little bit gets lost, ma'abden es mi'utu, you can let a little bit of it get lost bedrachim on the way, if you needed to, or you inconvenience, whatever it was. Venos la amaretz, and you're allowed to give it to an amaretz. When it comes to Maaser Sheni, usually Maaser Sheni has to be eaten b'tahara, and amaretzim are suspected of being tame, so you shouldn't be allowed to give them Maaser Sheni because you know you're causing the Maaser Sheni to become tame. But they were lenient when it came to Maaser Sheni of Demai because of the same leniency as before. We didn't make it extra difficult on them, but we add on v'yochal kenegdo. If you do give food that's Maaser Sheni to an ani in Yerushalayim to eat, you have to eat an extra amount of food with the stringencies of Maaser Sheni equal to the amount that you gave him. So if you gave him an apple, you have to eat another apple b'toras Maaser Sheni, like as a hashlama. Now exactly why that's the case is like a big question mark. Like there's no like good reason intrinsic to it. There's no magic. You're not making anything up. You gave it, it's gone. You can't turn the new apple into a Maaser Sheni apple. So the Chazon Ish suggests maybe it's just to inhibit people from using this as a blanket loophole. In other words, if it costs you something, you got some skin in the game when you give away your Maaser Sheni, you'll be less likely to just give it all away to Niyam. You'll be more hesitant too because it's going to cost you. That's a suggestion. Mechalono, so Kesef al Kesef, you can transfer, remember, you're taking the Kedusha of Maaser Sheni and putting it onto a coin, let's say a silver coin here. So normally, when it comes to real Maaser Sheni, you can't take that coin and then transfer the Kedusha from silver coin A to silver coin B. You're not allowed to do that, period. Only case would be if, let's say, it's a different currency and the new currency is accepted, the old one isn't, so then you could put it over. But otherwise, from silver to silver is forbidden across the board with Maaser Sheni, that's Vanai. And even from silver to copper, two different kinds of coins, copper is considered more like a commodity than like money. That even only can do b'shas adchak in a pressing situation. But when it comes to Maaser Sheni of Demai, it's more lenient. And mechalon also, kesef ala kesef, you can take from kesef and put it onto another piece of silver. Nechoshes al nechoshes, or from one copper to another piece of copper. Kesef al nechoshes, nechoshes al peros, you can take from kesef, silver, down to copper, even though copper is just a commodity. And even nechoshes al peros, and even take from copper, coin, and then so you had your apple that was your Maaser Sheni. You redeem it onto a coin. You can then redeem that coin back onto a new apple, which is not the case in Maaser Sheni Vadai. There, you only can use that coin to buy food if it's in Jerusalem for eating. But here, you can just totally commoditize the Kiddush and switch around even to a fruit. The next word, there's two different girsos. It says, ubilvad, so long as sheyachzor v'yifte es aperos, as long as you dafka redeem those fruits back onto money and then take that money to Yerushalayim and then use money to buy fruit in Jerusalem. And others take the word ubilvad out. The reason why is because if you put ubilvad in, it makes there be some kind of extra stringency that wouldn't actually exist by Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni that's vaday, you're not supposed to do this, but if you did do it, that fruit, you wouldn't have to redeem it back onto coin and then go to Jerusalem and buy this another time. But here it would come out you would. Many take it out, the Rav included, but the Rambam learns that the Rambam learns that you must take this fruit to Jerusalem, the very fruit that you, the halach is, the fruit that you redeemed on, you have to take that very fruit, not redeem it onto coin and bring it to Jerusalem. That's Rav Meir. The Chum Omrim Yalu Aperos V'yochlo B'Yushalayim. The Chum say, you're allowed to go to Jerusalem if you want to and take those fruit with you, but you don't have to. Okay, fine. Mishnah Gimel. Okay. The next two Mishnayos basically run us around the entire Shas. And I really lucked out when I have to give it the first time because there's a lot to be said here. Now, Mishnah Gimel, basically the issue is when it comes to food that's demai, so you're only allowed to, the stringencies of the suffix only apply if you're going to eat the food. Remember, demai, rove of demai, most of demai, is mesukan, has been cleaned, is ready to eat. And midoraisa, from the Torah's perspective, if you have a mixture and you have a rove, you can go after the rove. So you should be allowed to eat. Demai should carry no restrictions. So we've checked, most amaratim do it. The rabbis made a stringency and said, out of suffix, we want you to treat demai extra carefully and do a second round of out of suffix hafrashas. But that's only applying that the food's going to be eaten. If it's used for other purposes, then you're off the hook. And here are those examples here. Halokeach lezera. If you take your demai and you're planning on using it for planting. So instead of eating the apples, you're going to take the apple seeds, right? So then you don't, if it's demai, you don't need to take hafrashas first. When it comes to real tevel, we saw this machlokas in Peah, right? With Rabbi Akiva, but bottom line is midoraisa, that's the machlokas there, but midorabanan, for sure you have to tithe your seeds before you plant them, but you're off the hook when it comes to demai, because you're not eating it directly. Villa behema, and similarly feeding your behema, you're allowed to feed your behema demai. Normally, remember the obligation, you're allowed to, once you've done gemar malacha, you can't give your untithed fruit and foods to a behema. Remember, once you've done the meruch, here you're allowed to. Here you're allowed to. Provided, I should point out, that you didn't first acquire it for your own eating. If you first took the food thinking you're going to eat it and then change your mind, I'll give it to my animals, the obligation to take hafrash is already set in. But if you, from the outset, acquire this domain thinking it's animal food, no obligation is there. Kemach la'oros, and flour for skins, part of the tanning process in preparing leather hides is you dry them out with flour in those days. So you're destroying the kemach, so you're not eating it, so you're allowed to do it. I should point out that midoraisa, even tevel is allowed to be used not for food, and not the flushes aren't taken from it, provided that you aren't getting benefit from its destruction. So these examples here in the Mishnah are things that you're actually getting benefit from the destruction of the food, which would be usher by tevel, but it's lenient by the mind. So, for example, you're actually destroying the kemach by using it as a whatever it is, an absorbent, right? And shemen l'ner, the next case, you're burning it. You're burning the demai oil. Again, you're allowed to do that. If it was tevel, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. Shemen l'suchbo es akelim. If you use the oil to grease up, to grease your different utensils. Pater mina demai. All those things, you're not eating it. You're pater from all the stringencies of treating the demai out of suffix. I'm calling them stringencies, but really demai is leniency. Everyone understands that, right? This demai midoraisa should be totally lenient, and then the rabbis made some stringencies, but they're less stringent than regular tevel. Okay, mikziv ulahalan, and from kziv and farther north, Chziv is the same as Achziv, as in like Nachal Achziv. If anyone wanted the base tefillah camping trip, we went to this Chziv, but the street Chziv is named after it. So that place is up north, and although that region and farther north was captured and conquered by Yehoshua when he came in the first time, so it had Kedusha. When Yehoshua left, Klal Yisrael left in the Galus Bavel, so the Kedusha that was invested in Israel also went with it. And didn't come back, the Kedusha wasn't reestablished here to obligate Eretz Yisrael and the mitzvahs of that are totally barred to depend on the land until the Ole Bavel came back. When the Ole Bavel came back, so they only got up as far north as Chziv. So farther north than that is considered not halachli and doesn't carry the obligation midoraisa of hafrashas. Midorabanan, the rabbis said everywhere around here where Jews were living, they wanted the hafrashas taken. Midorabanan, that includes, let's say, most of Syria, most of Iraq, where Bavel is, Egypt, and Jordan, where Jews had spread around, they were obligated, but only midorabanan. So, since only midorabanan, they were lenient. If the food came from north of Chziv, you wouldn't have to take hafrashas from it if it's demai. Okay, now, these are examples, these next four things are examples. Well, for one reason or another, we assume that the Ani would have been more, the Amaaretz would have been more punctilious with his demai, more careful with his demai, for whatever reason. So here are the examples. Chalas Amaaretz. Chala, we've learned already, is the gift that you give from your dough to the Kohen. So that chala of the Amaaretz, it's given to the Kohen. The Kohen doesn't have to assume that he got Tevel. The Kohen can assume that the Ani was good to the Kohen and wouldn't mess around. You don't mess with the rabbi, so they would tithe it properly. Vaha Maduma. Okay, Maduma is, we saw once before also, it's when Truma gets mixed up back into a pile of Chulin. So normally we say, there's Bitul Barov, right? But Maduma is a case where you have a mixture of what's called yavesh, of dry objects that are like mixed up. So you have like, I don't know what, a hundred grapes, and one of the grapes was the truma grape, and it fell back in. So now you only have 99 grapes against one tevel grape. So when it comes to truma, we have extra trinity, you need to have more than 99 against one. It's actually machlokas if it's 100 against one or just 99 plus against one. But either way, right? Since Truma's mice is only 1%, so you have 99 against one. So if that falls back in the pile, the whole thing is called meduma. That's what the word means, meduma. It's like a dubious mixture that contains in it Truma, and a Yisrael cannot eat it, because a Yisrael cannot eat Truma. So it's given to the Kohen. So what happens if the Kohen got this meduma, but the chulin, 99% of it, is actually demai? Does he have to worry that demai is untithed? And the answer is no. We are assuming the Amaaretz wouldn't go selling his meduma to the Kohen without first being masakne properly. Then it's permissible. Then it's like considered batel. Truma's batel, and you're allowed to eat it. You can't. Yeah, that's always the case. Right. All iser. You can't mevatel iser l'chachila. What? Okay. Well, after the class, we'll answer questions. Yeah. Now. Okay, the halakuach bekesef ma'aser sheni. When you go, that which is acquired with the money of ma'aser sheni, what does that mean? When you go to Jerusalem and you bring your ma'aser sheni coins to buy the food there, so, and you're buying it from an Amaretz, we assume the Amaratzim who recognize this food is going to be, has a special status of ma'aser sheni, has kedusha and so on, they're not going to sell you, then they're going to take extra care to make sure that the food they're selling is properly tithed. Right, because it's properly used. And Ushiyori Menachos. A mincha is a flower offering. There's two kinds of offerings born on the base. I mean, there's zvachim and animal offerings. Menachos are like the flower-based offerings. So normally what happens is you make like a, there's lots of the kinds of menachos, but you make your pancake or whatever it is, loaf, whatever, the matzah thing. Then the Kohen takes what's called a kamitza. It's like that much. It's like what fits inside my fist minus my pinky. And that goes as a offering, and the rest the Kohanim eat. So what's left of the mincha, of the, let's say the pancake, you know, the offering, whatever it is, so that the Kohen eats, and that is called shiurei ha-menachos, the leftovers of the menachos. The Kohen can assume that if an Amar is going to bring food to the base mikdash, the korban, he's going to give proper tithes first, so he's allowed to be lenient, and it's Peturim and a demai. All these four things are exempt from the chashash of demai. Now, shemen arev, pleasant oil, the machlok is what it is, either, well, Beis Shammai is mechayven, Beis Shammai say whatever it is, you have to treat like Demaya, and Beis Hillel say no, it's pater. So two pshat on what shemen arev is. One is that it's balsam oil, like it's a pure perfume essentially, and the machlokus is if you have to worry about smells, as did that fall into the rabbinic stringencies on Demai, or just you're not eating it, you're just smelling it, so you don't have to not take off rashas. So that's the one possibility. The other machlokus, other possibility brought down by the Rav is that it's shemen arev is like olive oil mixed with myrrh and aloe and other spices, and you use it as like a lotion on your skin. So we have a general principle that sicha kashtia, like the anointing on yourself, is like comparable to drinking. Hence, for example, we don't anoint on Yom Kippur. But the question is if we apply the sicha kashtia principle when it comes to demai, or more lenient here, and that's machlokas b'shilim Beis Shammai. Okay, very good. That's Perek Aleph. Okay, Perek Beis. My. Okay. Oh, sorry, I was getting excited. I thought I'd... sorry, I apologize. Okay, so these are more leniencies now of Demai, and also, again, we're running around Shas here. So, HaDemai is Ma'arvin Bo. You can use it to make an Eruv. So there's two kinds of Eruvin we're talking about here, either Eruv Chatzeros or Eruv Itchumen. What are these things? So everyone knows you can't carry on Shabbos, but the rabbi said, that's true, that's Midorais, that's only true in what's called the Rishus HaRabim, only in a public, really public place. And Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is basically a big open area with a lot of traffic. Okay, we'll wait to Erevin to discuss the details. But if it's like a shared courtyard, like a public, it's like, it's really private, it's not an open area, it's got a big traffic through it. But it sort of seems public because it's not private, you know, it's like, in our English language, we would not call that a private area, if it's the courtyard to a number of houses, right? Or a cul-de-sac, let's say. A cul-de-sac is probably the best way to imagine it. So, even though Midoraisa, a cul-de-sac is not a Rishus HaRabim, but the rabbi said it sure looks like one, and people might make the mistake and think if I can carry in a cul-de-sac, I can carry in a main street. So, therefore, the rabbi said no carrying unless you somehow close off and unify the area. So, when we think of Erev, we always think of Erev first, like the strings and the poles around, but the real essence of an Erev, ironically, isn't the strings and poles. The essence of Erev is that there's some food that all of us have contributed towards, or each of us give, let's say, a loaf of bread. And then that food supply that we all have access to, like, unites us, because we all have equal access to the food, so we're all going to pass through this area. So that's what is like the glue which unites the different residents in the chatzer. So you can use, although normally, if the food is inedible, you couldn't use it to, people can't eat it, you can use it for an air of chatzeros, but here, since a person has a migo, he can make himself poor if he wanted to, so therefore, if you use demai as your air of chatzeros is going to work. An Erev Truman, something different, that is a separate issue, besides for carrying in Rosh Hashanah, you're not allowed to, your person, your body, can't go more than 2,000 amos outside of the boundaries of the city. It's called the Trum, okay? It's like 1 kilometer out the city. Not carrying anything, just can't go that far. You're supposed to have Shvisa, you know, resting in your place, and you can't go beyond. So when the city ends, that's where you have 2,000 almost from there. So the question is, if there's a possibility the rabbis allowed that you could determine ahead of time before Shabbos where like is the locus of your residency, where's the center of the 2,000 amma radius circle, right? Where is it? So if ahead of time you put a meal, an edible meal, for Shabbos in a location, let's say, for argument's sake, you know, 1,000 amos out into the field, and you say that's where my residency is for Shabbos. So now the circle that you draw around your home, that you have 2,000 amos in each direction around, is going to be from that food supply. So that way you can actually extend your range on Shabbos. So why would you want to do that? For example, if you want to go to your rabbi who lives 3,000 amos away in a different town, so you couldn't traverse that 3,000 amos wilderness, but if you make it, an Erev Tchumen in the middle of that area before Shabbos, you can walk the whole way through it. Okay? So, that only works if it's food that's edible for Shabbos, so we're saying Demai is allowed to be used for that. Okay. u'mishtatfinbo. This is shitufei mavos. It's really the same thing in concept as the Erev Chatzeros. This is a mavui, is like an alleyway that off of which many different chatzeros, many cul-de-sacs are built. So it's like more public-ish, if you will, although still assuming it's not along for, you know, open on both sides with through traffic, and so it's allowed to be carried in midoraisa, midorabban, and the rabbi said this looks very suspicious and a lot like a regular street, so you have to make, besides for the poles and the sticks, you gotta also, and strings, you gotta also have a food supply in the middle that unites it, and that's called shitufei mavos, the thing which unites, is mishtatef, is like to partnerize, so to make a partnership with the rest of the people in the mavui. Fine. Umavarchin alav, you can make a bracha on your demai. Okay, so one pshat, the rav's pshat, is that we're talking about birchas amazon. Normally, you can't make a bracha on things that are aser. It's a general good klal to know. You know, if you for whatever reason find yourself eating something that's aser, which you shouldn't, then you don't say a bracha on it. Okay, but there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, "Botzea berach niyetz Hashem," like the thief that blesses is blaspheming Hashem, and like, you know, you're eating what you shouldn't be eating. Not nice. It's not a praise at all. So here, even though it's actually usher to eat if you're not a ani, but if you did it, so it's not that usher because you have a migwa. You could have made yourself eligible by making yourself poor by mafkering your possessions, and therefore you can make a bracha on it. Birchas amazon. Okay, others learn something about the kosher bracha, but okay, same general principle. Umezamen alav. They say the kosher bracha because the next halacha here is you can use demai to make a zimin. We actually learned this in the seventh parak of brachas, if you remember. You can, if three people ate demai food, that was a no-no, but it wasn't that bad. They could still make a zimin on it. Uma frishna so arum, you can do the hafrashas of your demai when you're naked. What's that all about? Because you can't take a bracha when you're naked, but there's no bracha to be made, so you can take the hafrashas, no problem, right? And also, you can do it bein hashmashas. Bein hashmashas means there's the time period between night and day that is like its status is unclear, whether it's night or day. Now, normally when it comes to tevel, untied food, you're not allowed to tithe it on Shabbos, because that is looks like tikkun, like you're fixing something up, because you're repairing it to make it edible. So when it already misafik, when it comes to bein hashmashas, you can't tithe tevel, but since demai already is misafik, if it's even a problem, it's like doesn't look so bad after all. And if you could make yourself edible without able to eat it without having done the hafrashas, and therefore even during bein hashmashas you're allowed through the tithes, right? Ha im hikti ma'aser shen l'rishon, but if you were makdim and you preceded the ma'aser sheni hafrasha l'rishon to the ma'aser rishon hafrasha, that's you're supposed to first take ma'aser rishon and then ma'aser sheni, hence they call it ma'aser rishon and ma'aser sheni. But if you didn't, so if it would be tevel, it's no good. And what would happen is, although it works technically, when you're supposed to make the vidui on the meiser, the beer of the meiser, you're supposed to say part of the beer has a vidui. You say, and I did everything like you told me to do, but that's a lie if you did it out of order, and you actually bevatel a love to take it out of order. But that's so you wouldn't be able to make the vidui. But that's only if it's tevel. If it's demai, we're lenient again, and we say ein bekach klum. There's nothing in this. Ein bekach, there isn't in this klum anything. It's no big deal. No big deal, you can still do your vidui and don't stress it. Okay. Shemen hagardi, a weaver who uses oil, sach be'etzbosav, they can use the oil to lubricate their fingers. That's permitted. I'm sorry. If you use it to anoint your fingers, that's chay b'demai. You have to take the fresh of demai first, because it's a sikha kishtia, right? A gardi is a weaver. So shehagardi, that of the weaver. He can anoint his fingers, but he has to first take the demai, because it's a sikha kishtia, right? The shehasorek, and as for the wool comber, nosin b'tzemer, who puts even a lot of it into the tzemer, and it's getting lost, patur min ha-demai. That's okay, because you're not eating it. So if you're going to use it in your skin, it's absorbed, you have to make the hafrashas first. But if you're putting it into the wool, it's not a problem. And the mefarshim asks, it seems kind of repetitive, and they answer, even a lot. That's what says nosin, you just pour it in, it doesn't matter. Okay, your skin, yeah. Okay, very good. Perek Sheni. All right, that was rough. Here we go. Okay, produce from Eretz Yisrael is not chayv in demai. Excuse me. Produce not from Eretz Yisrael is not chayv in demai. Okay? So usually if you bought something from outside Eretz Yisrael, there's not even a chashash that it came from inside Eretz Yisrael. We don't assume. And possibly vice versa. So this Mishnah deals with certain exceptions to these rules, because Eretz Yisrael has certain like fruits which are unique to it. So El Devarim Misasrim Demai Bechomakom. These are things you have to take off rushes from the Demai no matter where you are, even outside of Eretz Yisrael. Hadvela, figs, these are the special Eretz Yisrael kind of figs that are very sweet, right? Vatamarim and dates, because these kind of Eretz Yisrael dates are very big. Charuvin, these are carobs. These kind of Eretz Yisrael carobs are like straight, not curved. Haorez, this kind of rice that grows in Eretz Yisrael, it's very white, distinctly white and uniquely white. Vakamon, that's cumin, like the shape of the kernels are straight and distinctive of Eretz Yisrael. Now, with all these things, Eretz Yisrael also can produce the, let's call them inferior versions also, so you never know. So in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be afraid, even if it's not the usual Eretz Yisrael type produce, if you bought it in Israel, you have to be concerned it came from Israel. And if you bought it out of Israel, but it looks like Eretz Yisrael stuff, you have to be afraid. But the exception here is, ha'orish b'chutz la'aretz, when it comes to rice, all the rice in Israel, blanket, is all this very white rice, and without the reddish hue that it has in the neighboring countries. So if you buy this rice, which looks like it came from chutz la'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael, still, kol mishtamish min upater, whoever used it is pater from demai, because this you know for sure didn't come from Israel, because Israel doesn't grow this kind of rice. Okay, but Mishnah Beis, you don't have the status of not an Am Haaretz until you formally declare I'm a Ne'eman. You have to make a formal declaration, unless you're a Talmud Chacham, a recognition. You have to actually set down a basin of three people and say, I'm accepting for myself to be a Ne'eman, and only from then on you become a Ne'eman. And even then, maybe you need to have like 30 days practice, according to some opinions. Others, you know, once ever knows you're kosher, but either way, it's a formal declaration. So, what does that declaration entail? Hamakabl alav liyos ne'eman. If a person accepts upon himself to be a ne'eman, so then ma'aser eshu ochel, he's obligated to tithe whatever he eats, veshu mocher, and whatever he sells, veshu lokech, and even stuff that he buys to pass on through his hands. Still, he has to, everything that passed through him has to become properly tithed. Ve'enu misarech etzel am ha'aretz, and he doesn't, you know, be a guest by an Am Haaretz eating their stuff. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, yeah, exactly. That's like the great conundrum of the Baal Tshuva. That's right. You can't hang out with his old friends anymore. That's right. Right? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, listen, Af Misarech Eitzel Am Haaretz Ne'eman. Rabbi Yehuda says, what's the big deal? A guy can hang out with his old friends and he'll be careful. Right? But they reject that. Amrulo, the rabbis say back, Al Atma in a Ne'eman, if he's like suspicious on his own behavior, and many Pshatim learn he actually eats from their food. I think most Mepharshim learn like that. So then, Ketzed, Ye Ne'eman al Shalacherim. How can other people trust him, possibly? And so the halach, of course, does not follow Rabbi Yehuda. It's like the Chacham that a person has to be, cannot be Misareach Eitzel Am Haaretz if he wants to be a Ne'eman. Okay, Mishnah Gimel. Now, nothing to do with Demai. Just since we're talking about special halachic clubs, one more called the Chaver Club, which are people who are strict on Tumah Tahara. These people have accepted upon themselves that they will not eat food, even chulin, in a state of Tumah. Okay? And therefore, when you transact with them, you can assume that they'll keep food in Tahara. So, Makabal Alav Lios Chaver. If a guy wants to be a Chaver, so then, Eino Mocher Lam Arts Lach V'Yavesh. He will not sell to an Am Haaretz food, neither lach nor yavesh. Literally, lach means wet and yavesh means dry. But what it means in this context is that food never is not able to become tame until it first gets wet and becomes huchsha lekabel tuma, until it becomes like readied to receive tuma. Wet with one of these seven yad shachadam, those seven different liquids. So he, of course, can't sell fruit which has already touched water or whatever. Now it's just the actual way to happen to become tame. But even yavesh, even an apple that never got wet, still he can't sell it to an Am Haaretz because we were afraid the Am Haaretz will go and and make a tummy. And he also can't purchase from an Am Haaretz food that had been ready, had become wet and ready to become a tuma, but he could buy from him yavish. And this is a very important point. Very important point. We're not assuming that Amoratzim are liars. Okay? They're just not ne'eman, they're not reliable to take tithes properly. It's a big difference, right? A big difference. So we're not calling him a liar, we're simply calling him like not necessarily so, you know, up to scratch with his halachic observance. So if he tells you this food never got wet, then you can believe him. You don't think he's a liar. But if he tells you it got wet but didn't become tame, that you don't believe him, not because he's lying to you, because he just doesn't know what makes food tame. Okay, and we assume all Amoratzim are tame anyways, for that very reason. Veinu Misarech Eitzel Am Haaretz, the chaver won't eat by the Am Haaretz, right? V'lo Ma'archo Eitzelo B'Ksuso, he also won't let the Am Haaretz eat in his house wearing his clothing, the Am Haaretz's clothing. But if he strips him and gives him new tough clothing, he's allowed. Basically, we assume, first of all, that the tuma of an Am Haaretz clothing is actually worse than his body, because an Am Haaretz will be matami if he touches you, whereas the tuma embedded in Am Haaretz's clothing, assuming that his wife once sat on it, is like much stronger. Even hesed, even just causing it to move directly, will transfer tuma onto you. So the clothes are a big problem. Therefore, you have to, if you want him over, you want to do kiruv on him, you gotta first give him nice shabbos clothes to wear. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda adds a whole string of extra stringencies if you want to be part of the in club, and this is not the halacha, but he says, af, also, lo yigadol b'hei madaka, a chaver can't grow small animals, like can't be a shepherd, rear sheep, for example, because they invariably go and eat other people's property, and so he's like kind of like a low-grade thief. V'lo yehei parat menadarim, he can't be one who like is always vowing to take on things, because those kind of people who are always swearing to do things don't always fulfill what they say, so really he's backhandedly, he thinks he's being from, really we know he doesn't keep his word, so we can't trust him. U'b'schok, and same goes with if he's like, you know, breaches the bounds of excessive, you know, joking around, frivolity, because that invariably leads to other misbehavior, lewdness. V'lo yehei metamah b'mason, and he also wouldn't let himself become tameh for a mace, for no good reason. He's not a Kohen, or Kohen Gadol, but he avoids funerals unless he has to go, because relative, whatever it is. The reason why is because Rabbi Yehuda says that's a 7-day complicated process to become tahor. So if you're serious about never eating food and making a tummy or a betuma, you wouldn't let yourself get into that situation unnecessarily. Fine. U'mishamash beis hamidrash, and also the guy has to be like someone who's like, you know, involved in beis hamidrash. He's mishamash tamnei chacham. He's involved with tamnei chacham. That shows he's serious. He can be part of our club. But the halacha rejects that. Amr lo bo el klal. Those things aren't part of the. Those things don't come into the issue here at all. As long as you keep tahor and everything's tahor about you, then that's all you need to become a chaver. Okay. Now, we're going to give some exceptions to people, sellers of produce, who can sell products as demai. That doesn't mean you're allowed to eat it as demai. The purchaser, you know, buyer beware, purchaser will have to take the afrashas. But we're lenient here in the case it's going to be of nachtomen, of bakers, even bakers who are selling these bakers here, we didn't obligate them because they're selling at very, very low margins, and government restrictions squeeze them. So we don't want to make it impossible for them to function. So hanachtomen lo chivu osam chacham lahafresh. We didn't obligate the bakers to take afreshes. Elakadei trumas meiser v'chala. Just trumas meiser, that because that's the real poison embedded in the demai, and the chala. The chala is also has the same status. It belongs to the Kohen. It has to be taken out because the obligation was set in once it was baked into being bread. Achen vanim. Okay. So now achen vani is a regular storekeeper. So he has higher profit margins, and also he sells to children directly. He's like a retail. So now, because of those two reasons, we don't want to be lenient on him. He can't go busy selling not tied food to the market, and also children for sure can't be expected to take hafrashas. The achen vani einan rishayin limkor as a damai. They can't sell demai. Kol ha-mashbin b'midagasa, anyone who like pours out in like a big measure, like he doesn't, you know, so since we expect that he like overfills the cup, so to speak, in like big quantities. So he's that's the way that you sell, and that's to the benefit of the purchaser. So rather than squeeze his profit margins any further, we say, good, you're the beneficiary of like the society's largesse. You know, the ethics of the of salesmanship is that, you know, the distributor gives throws in a little extra, so then you have to take care of Frushes as the purchaser. So as long as he's mashbi and he overfills b'midah gasa, like with a big measure, which we'll define in a second, Rishayin Limkor Esa Demai, that kind of person is allowed to sell Demai. Elu Hein HaMashbiim B'midah Gasa, and who are those guys? How much is it? Kagon Hasitonos U'mochri Tavua. A Siton is like a wholesaler, and Mochri Tavua are like the wheat sellers, okay? Now, going further out of the concept of the previous Mishnah, talking about the sizes of how big is big, Rabbi Meir Omer, Es shadarku lehimaded bagasa, if the way in which you measure things out is bamida gasa, in a big quantity, and that's like the normal way you do it with this kind of particular commodity, umadada badaka, but this particular transaction you just did, this guy wanted just a few, he wanted a few stalks of wheat for whatever weird reason. So then we say, tfela daka lagasa, like this one transaction with small amounts is, you know, is secondary, is tuffle to the main transaction, and just because the guy has a dispensation allowing him to sell without taking off rushes first, that still exists even this one unusual case. However, the opposite is also true. Esha darko limadid bedaka, if normally the guy sells, you know, things that are sold in small quantities and he always has to take off rushes first, umadada bagasa, and one time, you know, someone asks for like a huge quantity, you know, of mustard seeds or something, so then tfela gas ladaka, doesn't matter. His usual way is to require him as a mustard merchant, to have to, which is normally small qualities, to take the tithes. So here he has to take the tithes also. We can't give to mine. Ezuhi. So how big is a midah gasa? B'yavesh, when it comes to dry things, it's shloshes kabin, 3 kabin. A kab, we said, is like 2 liters, so like 6 liters. Ubalach dinar. When it comes to lach things, it's the amount of lach that you can, of liquids, I should say, that you can acquire with the value of a dinar. And unfortunately, why do they talk in value? They say because the price of liquids fluctuates more. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rabbi Yossi says, Salit Einam. He adds to what are other like categories people should be able to sell without sell demai. People who sell Salit Einam, you know, baskets of figs, Vesali Novim, and baskets of grapes, Bakupa Shalyerek, and like, you know, boxes of vegetables, Kolzman Shu Mochin Achsara. As long as he sells it Achsara, then he's Pater. He says these things are also kind of like midah gasa. They're big, you know, either they're big, or there's a little extra thrown in there. You know, if you have punnets of strawberries, so then everyone like goes and picks the biggest one that's overflowing. So let him deal with the hafrashes. Now, what achsra actually means is 3 pshat, and 1 pshat is it means just estimation. You know, you just say, no, just, you know, you see the mark that says, you know, it wasn't weighed exactly. It's, you know, one basket full. Okay, good. Measure by sight. Yeah. You're not weighing it. Good. Other pshatim are that he's selling it at a break-even price, or other pshatim that he's selling it at a loss. So because of these reasons, we're lenient on him. Either way, the purchaser is the beneficiary of the deal here, so he has to deal with the hafrashas. Okay. Great. Perek Shlishi. Okay. Now we're dealing with basically the whole perek. There's leniences in demai, especially people who can get demai without taking the freshness and eat it in its demai state. So machilin es ha'aniyim, you can feed poor people demai, like if they put their hand out, you can give them untied food, and they can eat it. The es ha'achsanya, and also nachsanya. Nachsanya is, mumshad is, they're the army garrison moving through the town that just came to you for the afternoon for lunch. The king says you got to feed them, so you got to feed them, but you can feed them with demai. Some say they're aniyim there anyway, there's nothing else to eat, so they fall in the same category. But in both these cases, they stay overnight, and they're like residents for the night, then you have to be misakin these things first. Okay? Rabbi Gamliel haya machil es polav demai. Rabbi Gamliel went so far as to feed his workers, who worked, part of their wage was actual food. He used to give them demai to eat, but Allah doesn't like him, because we say you can't be pay your bills with food that belongs to the aniyim, and since perhaps it is embedded, you know, demai is embedded food that's not yours, you can't use it to pay your obligations. Okay, gabay tzedakah. Now, the tzedakah collectors. Remember we talked about how there was the tamchui and the kupa. Tamchui was a plate with ready-to-eat food. So what's going to happen is, you know, they're going around on every day. They stick around, they walk around, they collect food, which they're going to give to people who are hungry today. So what's going to happen? Some of the people in the shul, you trust their kasha, and some you're not so sure about. So when you give it to the niyam, are you going to give them the good stuff, the bad stuff? How do you work it out? So Beis Shammai says, since he says, Beis Shammai won't let you feed a niyam demai without fixing it first. That's a shita throughout. So he says, Nosin esa mu'usar l'she'enu ma'aser. He says, keep plates, A grade and B grade. So the stuff that you get, which has the badas heksher, because you got it from the good guys in the shul, you give that to the poor people who won't otherwise tithe. So you sort them out. Ve'esh'enu mu'usar l'ma'aser, and that which you collected from those who can't be relied upon to do a freshness properly, give it to the from but poor aniyim, who will then take a freshness. And that way everyone, kol adam nimsu, kol adam ochlin mesukim. It comes out everyone will have, you know, kosher food to eat. V'chachamim, omrim, they reject Beis Shammai. They say govin stam and machalkin stam. They say you just collect in one big pile and you distribute one big pile, undifferentiated. Varot l'sakin yisakin. And whoever wants to be masakin could be masakin. And Meforshim say, actually, the halacha is that I mean have to be masakin. But either way, we don't want to make the donors, the benefactors, you know, be insulted that they're giving, and therefore they'll stop giving. That would be a loss to the neem, so therefore the chum say that's bad news. Good. Mishnah Beis, these are indirect ways in which demai ends up passing through your hands, besides for selling it, which could end up in someone else's mouth, and therefore we have to do the freshness first. So, harotze lachazom ala yerek lahakal memaso. If a person wants to, like, prune, to trim the leaves off of his vegetables to lighten his load, lo yashlich ad shi'aser. You can't, like, you know, discard of the leaves that he cut off until he first tithes the produce, because someone else is going to come by and find those leaves and eat them. Okay? And then he'll be eating stuff that's and a masukin, not fixed up yet. Halukeach yarek min hashuk. If a person takes a vegetable from the market and he picks it up and he has in mind to acquire it, and this value, the price is preset, so the deal really is done, right? V'nimlach, but then he changes his mind, lahak, said he puts it back in the pile. Lo yachzir, he can't put it back into the vegetable pile. Ad shi'asar, until he first tithes it. She'enu mechusar elaminyan, because everything was done with the transaction. You just had to decide if you want to take, you know, three or four boxes, you know, at $1 a piece. So that acquisition was done. So you now can't pass it back in without first meistering it. Haya omen belokech. If you're just sitting there doing your shopping and you haven't agreed on a price, you haven't agreed on purchasing it, v'ra'al to'en acher yafim menu, and you see another guy selling a different stuff that's better than what you were dealing with, then since you had a mind ready to acquire this particular thing that you're holding, whatever it is, mutu lahachzir, you can put it back since the sale hasn't been finished, and mipnei shelo mashach, because you didn't yet do a mashich on it, which is said is lavdafka, it means literally means a hagbah, because to make a kinyan you need to lift it up, mashach means to pull, but it means you didn't pull it in order to acquire it. Good. Mishnah Gimel is a continuation of the theme of the first Mishnah, of the previous Mishnah, I should say, and it dealing with kinyanim here a little bit. Hamotzi peros baderach v'natlan la'achlam. If a person finds fruit on the road and he takes them because he wants to eat them, right? V'nimlach, after he picks up the apple he found on the ground, he says, you know what, I'll leave it for someone poorer than me. Latznia, he like sets it aside. Latznia means done. Nimlach means to change your mind. Change your mind. Nimlach means to change your mind. I think it's actually same as melech, I think. Yeah, because a melech consults. He's supposed to, a melech is supposed to be a humble person who consults with others. He's not supposed to be an autocratic dictator. That's the point. You see, yeah, fine. Nimlach. Change his mind. Right? And so he puts it back. So now, since he acquired it when he picked it up, and now he's latznia means like literally means to hide away, to set it away for some other person. Lo, but it means for someone else, not for him. Lo yatznia, he can't put it aside. Ad shi aser, until he first ties it, because he had a kidney on it. Ve'im mitzchila natlan bishvil shlo yovdu. If from the outset he only picked it up to take it off the road to put it so it shouldn't get trampled and ruined, because that's a separate. You're not allowed to let food get ruined. They have a proper cupboard for it. Then he's putter from taking a freshness because he never acquired it. He just put it aside. Kol davar she'ein adam rishai l'machro demai. Now anything that you can't sell in demai form, small quantity type transactions. Lo yishlach lechaveru demai. You can't even send it as a gift to your friend in demai state, right? And Rabbi Yossi matir bevade. Rabbi Yossi says okay, when it comes to Vadai, it would be mutter to send it to him. Ubilvad shiodienu. As long as you put a sign that says this is Enu Musukin, you should be allowed, it's a present, but make sure you fix it up first. So he says that should be okay. But the rabbis reject it, and that's the halacha, like them, because they say, people will from time to time forget to give the disclaimer. People end up eating Enu Musukin. Okay, Mishnayos now, the second half, 4 through 6 of the parak, deal with produce that you deposited by other people one way or the other, and you're concerned that maybe the person who's in charge of it switched things around, right? You give it in as kosher, but it may come out as no longer chulin. So, hamolech chitin letochen kusi o letochen amart. If a person schleps his wheat to a grinder, that's a kusi, right? Kusi is this dubious Jew. At the time of the Mishnah's writing here, we're assuming we haven't written them off. Later on, they wrote them off as goyim in general. O letochen amart, or just a grinder, a miller who's an amart. Bechezkasen lemasters ulishvias. We don't assume, just because he's an amart doesn't mean he's not a bad guy. We don't assume he's going to be a thief and steal your stuff and give you someone else's stuff. So there, they remain in their chazaka, they remain in their established status quo of whatever the maestros and, it's where the maestros and shafias. Yeah, you brought him in kosher, exactly. Yeah, brought him metukan, exactly. But latochen nochri, if you brought your metukan food in to a Gentile miller, then demai, you're not sure if what he gives you back, who knows, you just assume it must have come from one of his other clients. And therefore, who knows that client did proper refreshes. It's demai. Hamafkid peiros of etzal akusi. If you give it to a kusi to watch, or etzal ma'aretz, again, just to watch. This person's not a professional. He doesn't deal with food in and out of his place. He's put it in his basement for storage. Bechazkas l'masos l'shvius. We say, so the guy, it says a private person. What's he going to do? You trust him. He's not going to lie to you. Etzal ha'nochri, but by a nochri, k'peiros of. You can assume that he switched your stuff out and put his stuff in. And ironically, his parents would be exempt from hafrashas, but still, yeah. So it's exempt from hafrashas, but the rabbi said when you give it into him, you still have to give it to him in a mesukin way. And Rabbi Shimon Amer, demai. Rabbi Shimon says it's not like his fruit, it's demai, because he says maybe someone else, one of your other neighbors, also gave this guy a watch, and basically the non-Jew gave you, your neighbor's food. And the rabbis say, that's a little too far. I mean, he's not a professional food store. So who said it's demai? Treat it like his food. Good. Okay, Mishnah Hey. I noticed in the pundakis, if you give it to a pundakis, this is like an innkeeper. And the way they did it is they would give the food, the raw materials, to the pundakis, and she would make dinner for them. So ma'aser eshu nosin la. You got to give it into her in a matukan way. The eshu no tell mimena. And also when you get it back from her, you got to deal the fashas all over again. Because this woman is like to switch around the produce. Here, it's not so much she's a thief as she wants you to be a happy customer, so she will make sure that you have good stuff. She might end up putting in not kosher ingredients or switching things around. So the question is then, why should you have to give it in Mitsuka and let it just once on the way back out, fix it once? Why don't you worry about her thievery and giving your stuff to someone else? Rabbi Yossi, ain't no achrayin l'ramayin. We don't have to worry about tricksters, right? We shouldn't have to give it. Ain't no maaser ela mashu no tamemenu bilvad. Just maestro once on the way out. Why did the maestro on the way in? But the law doesn't like him because we say it's not that they agree that for Ramai you don't have to worry about, but here she's not a Ramai. She's just trying to do her job the best way she could. So we are afraid she did it, and therefore you have to make sure that the food supply stays untainted and give it in a mesukin way. Fine. And Mishnah Vav. Hanosin l'chamaso. You give it to your mother-in-law. So then maestro eshu nosin la ve'eshu noitel mena. Again, like the pudakas, you got to be take a fresh as you give it to her and a fresh on the way out. Why? She is suspected to have switched out the bad stuff. What does that mean? If the stuff became spoiled or she spoiled it, she wants her daughter and her son-in-law to be happy, so she'll end up putting in good ingredients and she went buying it at a non-kosher place. So you have to be afraid that's what she did. Amr Bihuda wrote Sahi Betakanas Bita Bosha Mitchanasa Me Chasana. Rabbi Yehuda says, he's not arguing, he's explaining to the reason why, it's because she's afraid, she's embarrassed to give them bad quality food, so that's why she does it. Not that she's a Ramai, that's what it's saying. Moder Rabbi Yehuda benoisim lechamaso shvias, but Rabbi Yehuda agrees, when it comes to shvias, even the Amaratzim were spooked out by shvias, by shmita fruit, and therefore we're not going to assume she'ena chashudu lechachlif. She's not expected to take a shmita year and give her daughter or her son-in-law Lachal es bita shvias, to feed her daughter, to feed her daughter shvias, she would never do that. Okay, good. Perek Revi. The general klal is that amaratzim are they're not believed to take kafrashas, and therefore we have a whole status of demai. This mishnah is going to list exceptions. I want to spook out. There's two issues here. One issue is that they're not reliable to take kafrashas, and the one issue is they're not believable. The second issue is whether or not they're believable if they say they did. Okay, there's two. So one is like you believe them, and we say we don't believe them because we think they botched it. And one is they're not reliable. Two different issues. That's going to explain the double lush that we were asking about when we learned this last time. So, if you purchase your fruit from someone who is not ne'eman al ma'isras, so then he's not trustworthy on his, reliable to take kafrashas properly. V'shachach la'asran. And then comes Shabbos and you had forgotten to take care of kafrashas. So now you haven't fixed the demai. Now you're sitting with the demai on Shabbos. What are you going to do? So v'sho'alo, if you ask him b'Shabbos, and you ask him on Shabbos, and he says yes, it is properly tithed, yochel el piv, you can rely on his word and eat that food on Shabbos. The reason why is A, he wouldn't lie on Shabbos. Even the Amoratzim are afraid to lie on Shabbos. It's Shabbos. And second of all, the Chacham wanted to be lenient on Shabbos because of the mitzvah of having food on Shabbos, right? There's a special issue of Onik Shabbos. So they're lenient. However, Chashcha, Moti Shabbos, when it gets dark, Moti Shabbos, even though they swore before and you believed them, now the extra issue of Onik Shabbos falls away. Lo Yochel Ad Shi Aser. The food becomes forbidden again until you take the freshness on it. Swore. Yes, not a formal in the mace, but he promises this. Don't worry, I promise you it's fixed. Lo matzo. If you can't find the Amaretz who sold it to you, Amar lo echad, and another guy tells you, she'eino ne'eman, a different Amaretz, who knows the first guy, the actual original seller to you, and he swears, he is eino ne'eman on the ma'isras, but he says, he assures you, that mu'usar in hand, that they indeed were tithed, ochel el piv, you can even rely on that guy, for the same reason.
It's so weird because today it's like, I have like this amazing sweet Spartan family.
Okay, fine. I guess that's two issues. The issue is if they know what they're talking about and if they're going to lie. So we're assuming he's not a liar. And we're assuming here that most Amaratzim did take that fascia. So like everyone knew what to do.
What was correct.
And they knew, exactly. They knew what was no good and what was good. Yep. Okay. Fine. Everyone had that little chazanish one sentence thing up there. Everyone had their like the carrot and maestros, the one sentence thing. It wasn't hard, I guess. I mean, I'm being facetious. Point is, everyone knew what to do. It wasn't that hard. Okay. Yep. So ochel el piv, you're allowed to rely on that third party. Chashcha motzi Shabbos. Once it gets dark, motzi Shabbos. Lo yochel ad shi aser. No longer can you eat it until you first take your tithes. Shubas ma'aser shel demai shechazer lemkomo. This is that case of Meduma. You had this 1%, the Trumas Meister, that came from the Demai, but it fell back in the Demai. So now it potentially ruined everything, all 100 pieces. Right? Rabbi Shimon, Shizuri Omer, Af Bechol Sholov Ochel Piv. He says, even not on Shabbos, you can ask the Am Arts, listen, buddy, was that, I took the Afrashas, but was your stuff already tithed? Because if it was, then your Trumas Meister actually isn't Trumas Meister, and it won't ruin everything. Otherwise, it's going to cost you all your food. That's a big loss, right? All your food will become ruined. So, because of that, we'll be lenient, if Shimon Zuri says, and that's the halacha, to eat if he promises, if he assures you. Okay. Base. Now we're talking about a case where it's an Amaretz who you wouldn't normally eat by, but he's making a chasna, and he wants you to come, and he says, if you don't come to my chasna, then he says, he vows, if you don't eat, you're literally Hamadar as Chavero, one who vows that his friend Shiochel Eitzel should eat by him, meaning that he says, if you don't eat by me, you'll never again get any benefit from my property. Right? Vuhu Eno Ma'amino Ala Masras, and the guy is just not Eno Naaman, he's not reliable. This is the most important place, that distinction. First of all, he's not Naaman to take the Maestras, he's not Mars, he can't be relied on to take the Maestras. Right, ochel ibu b'Shabbos harishona. The first Shabbos, the first wedding night, it's very important to him that you could eat on him, eat with him. Va'afal pi she'enu mamino ala ma'isras. Even though you don't even believe him that when he says he was Maaseret. You don't trust the guy. That's the double lashon here. First of all, the halacha says you can't trust any amarts. But this is even when you suspect. He's promising and you're like, I don't trust this guy. You know, the guy just, he's, you know, it's worse than he's not trusted. The halacha is every amart is not to be trusted. You have your doubts about this particular guy. Right? Even so, for the sake of Darchei Shalom, as a one-off, we'll allow you to rely on his word. If he promises, he promised. You still believe him. So long as he has to assure you that they are the Mu'usar, that they're tithed. He has to explicitly assure you. Yeah, the host of the wedding. This is a one off thing at the wedding. Because Darchei Shalom, because we're leading here. And on the second Shabbos, like, you know, the next party for the wedding, let's say, within 30 days, whatever it is, even if the host says, you know, if you don't eat by me, that's it, we're through, it takes a vow. Even so, lo yechel ad she'asar, that's too bad. We'll be lenient once, so you can be friends, but after that, enough is enough. First, you have to take off rushes. Yep, Mishnah Gimel. Okay, now, there's a concept called korei shem. If you want to remove the tevel from the tevel status from something, you have to take the afrashas off. But you don't actually have to necessarily physically pull the piece off from the, let's say, from the dough, right, or the pile. You can just simply korei shem, declare a name. Say, this over here is my miser, and that will work to make it miser. You don't have to physically remove the miser from it. For example, it's called kriyas shem, and we'll see more of that in Parakeh. And also, our Mishnah here is dealing with particularly Maaser Ani, the food that has to go to an Ani, this Mishnah here. So we say, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ein Adam Tzarech Likro Shem L'Maaser Ani Shel Demai. He says, you don't even need to be Koreh Shem on the Maaser Ani of Demai. Remember, Maaser Ani is only a financial obligation. You give it in years 3 and year 6. Since the Ani, the poor person, will never be able to prove you owe him the food because it's just Demai, don't even have to bother with Kriya Shem. Don't have to go through the ceremony of saying this is Maaser Ani, making Maaser Ani, just that you eat it. He says don't even bother. V'acham omrim korei shem. He said no, you have to declare it. This is Maaser Ani. Then it's arach lahafrish, but don't actually have to take it off. Since it costs you nothing, you're gonna eat it anyways. At least do the mitzvah properly of declaring what's Maaser Ani. You make it Maaser Ani, then you eat it. Okay, now we're talking about now Mishnah Dalet here is giving gifts on Shabbos of truma to a kohen or maaser ani to a poor person on Shabbos. You don't give gifts on Shabbos normally because giving gifts on Shabbos looks like a transaction, and that's going to lead you to start writing things down. So no gifts on Shabbos. So misha kara shem le trumas maaser shel demai. If a person had this korei shem, had designated something to be trumas maaser of demai, ula maaser ani shel demai, shavadai, excuse me, or maaser ani that goes to ani, the food shalvada, I'm certainly given food. Lo yitlem b'Shabbos, you can't give them on Shabbos because that looks like you're giving something on Shabbos, and that's a gift. You can't do it. However, v'mahaya kohen, if you have a kohen o ani or a poor person lemudu me'achal etzlo, who's like a regular in your house, they always are coming over. So then yavo v'yochlu, let them come to your house and you can feed them their truma or their maaser ani, and they can eat it because that doesn't look like you're giving them a gift. It looks like they're eating in your house. You're just feeding them with the food that belongs to them anyways. Ubevad shiodiyam. You have to tell them. You can't be over Geneva's das. You can't trick them into thinking you're being such a nice guy, because really you're feeding them their food. So you have to tell them, but you're allowed to give them to eat it on Shabbos if they're regulars, because it doesn't look like you're giving a gift like a transaction. Okay, Mishnah Hey. Now this is talking about the credibility of an Amaretz. These next two Mishnahs are dealing with that issue. If you say to someone who isn't believed on Maestros, Kachli Mimishu Neman Mimishu Maaser, go buy for me some food from a guy who wouldn't lie to you, who can be relied to take a freshes, and the servant comes back, but he was an Amaret, and he says, I did it, Eno Neman, you can't trust the guy. Maybe he didn't, maybe he bought it from a not kosher proprietor. The ish ploni, if you say to your Amma Arts friend, buy it from Yosef, you know, the farmer who we trust, and he comes back and says, I bought it from Yosef, Hareza Neman, you can believe him for that. Halach likach mimenu, If you say, go and buy it from Yosef, the farmer we trust, va'amar lo, and he comes back and says, lo matzasev, I couldn't find Yosef, v'lekach t'lecha ma'acher shu ne'eman, but I bought it from, you know, from another guy. And that guy is just as good as Yosef. He had the exact same, you know, two down the window. Eino ne'eman, that's not good enough. Right? It has to be that there's a specific person you can check up on. And we said, according to most proportion, if he said, I bought it from Shimon, you know, the farmer, and everyone knows Shimon also, then he's believed because, like, it's a thing that will come out in the wash sooner or later, and he wouldn't lie if he could be found out. Okay? Good. Mishnah Vav. Fascinating. Mishnah Yas here. Adnichnas la'ir. A person who goes into a city, and he's an out-of-towner. He knows nobody. They don't mock your Adam Shab. He knows not a soul. If he knew a soul, this wouldn't apply. He'd have to go consult with his friend and ask him for advice. But here, he knows nobody. So Amar, he just says in the Shuk, Mikan Ne'eman, Mikan Ma'asar. He's like, who can I trust here? Who takes proper refreshes? Amar Loi Echad. If one guy says, Ani, he says, oh, I'm your guy. So Eino Ne'eman. He's not believed. That's the point. Not, of course, he's an Amar. However, Amar Lo, if this person speaks up and he says, Ish Ploni Ne'eman, he says, the guy, that particular guy over there, you know, he's the guy everyone who wants kosher food goes to, he can be relied upon. Harei Ne'eman. The rabbis are lenient in such a situation because he's an out-of-towner, he's going to be hungry, right? So it shouldn't be like, you know, in a terrible situation. We say the visitor can rely on the testimony of this person, even though we have no idea if he's reliable or not, right? Halach Likach Mimenu. If now you go to the recommended, you know, shopkeeper, and after you bought the food, you say to him, Amalo Mikan Mocher Yashan, you know, where can I get, let's say for example, this guy sold grapes, and now you want to get the baker. So who's the baker that sells Yashan? That's like, you know, flour that has got the status of Yashan, meaning that the crop came from before this Omer was brought, the second day of Pesach, as we explained at length before, right? Or according to Rashi and Tosos, it just means like quality food. I want to get the, you know, who's the quality. Anyway, Amar Lo, and this second person who was the one who Mr. A recommended Mr. B. So you're at Mr. B, and Mr. B now says, Misha Shalach Etzli, Mr. A who recommended you to me, he's the guy where you can get the Yashin from. Afal Pishin Kagomun Zedze, even though it looks like they're like, you know, scratching each other's back, you know, bestowing on each other, right? Hare Elon Emanim, you're allowed to believe it, but, you know, it's still you're allowed, because we don't want the guy to suffer. Will be lenient here. However, Mishnah Zayin is a different case. Here, you're in your hometown, and the chamarin, the donkey drivers that bring the supplies, shenichnasu l'ir, they come to your city, right? And Amar Echad, and there are two guys, and one of them says, Shli chadash shel chaveri yashan, you know, my stuff is chadash, but my friend's stuff, it's the good stuff, it's yashan, either good quality or halachli good. Shli einu mesukan v'shel chaveri mesukan, you know, my stuff isn't tithe, but my friends is, and on him, the whole deal is suspicious. They're in cahoots. Can't trust these guys, right? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ne'eman. Rabbi Yehuda says, even in such a case, they're Ne'eman. His reason though is really extraneous. He says, listen, if we don't trust them, they're never gonna come back. If they don't come back, we're gonna have no food, right? So if we chase the supplies out of our city, we're gonna be hungry. So we're forced to be good to these guys, and we rely on the fact that, you know, a typical person not assumed to be a liar. Okay, but the halacha is not like him. Okay.
Do we believe these people or we don't?
Halacha, we do not believe them.
And we're not afraid that they might be upset and not come back?
What are you going to do?
I don't believe them.
No.
Are they Amara?
They're not Ne'eman. They're not believed for sure. Okay, I sent out an email, but it only came like this morning, I don't know why, with a diagram that came on the board. Google Groups is misbehaving. What can I do? In any case, I tried like many times to send it before. But it's in your email, it's on the website, the diagrams from the board from yesterday, more or less. So here's the case though. Halokeach min anachtum, if you buy something from anachtum, ketad hu ma'asar, how do you take the freshness? Now we're talking about anachtum who's providing food to you that is demai food, and therefore you have to take not truma, but you have to take truma's ma'asar out of it, and also you have to take challah, because when the baker baked it, he is supposed to take challah out, that's 2%. So, no tel kadei trumas maaser, you take enough for trumas maaser, that's 1%, right? Because the 10% for maaser, and 10% of the 10% is 1%, that's trumas maaser. So you designate that, 1%, plus could take Trumas Meiser, and also V'chal, and also Challah. Challah is 1/48 of what would remain after you take the Trumas Meiser, so it's like, what's called 2%, it's a fraction over 2%. So now you take 3% altogether, and you say this 3% of the bread supply here, V'omer, Echa Mameya Mamashi Yeshkan, of these 3%, one of them that I have here, Harei Zeh B'tzad Zeh Meiser, this over here I'm pointing to, you know, this 1% out of the 3 I've designated, that's going to be the Meiser. Ushar Meiser Samachlo. No, that's the next Mishnah. Sorry. So, and the rest of the other, you know, 9/10 are the 9 that's next to it. Right? Zesh Asisi Meiser, and the first 1% I declared as the first bit of the Meiser, Asi Trumas Meiser, a love, it will be the Trumas Meiser for the all 10 of them. Yeah. So, and that, so that you have that one now, the Trumas Meiser, the other 9 will become Meiser Rishon, which you can eat, and you had taken 3 originally, so one of the 3 you said was be the Trumas Meiser, of the other 2, Vashar Challah, and the rest of the 3 you originally took, that becomes your Challah. So then, in other words, those 3%, the Trumas Meiser 1 and the Challah 2, goes to Kohen, and other 97%, you get to eat. Provided, Maaser Sheni b'tzafono o b'dromo, you have a problem of Maaser Sheni, it's lurking somewhere in there. Maaser Sheni has to go to Jerusalem. So what do? U'mechul alamos, you redeem that Maaser Sheni onto a coin, the 10% of what's left onto a coin. You eat 97% of the bread, and then 10% of it is going to be on a coin, which will go to Yerushalayim, which you'll buy later on food. It's a good question. It's 10%.
That's what I couldn't understand.
Yeah, good. It's 10% after you've taken Trumas Meiser.
It says, I've taken this. Now I'm going to give 10%, which is 1/100.
Right, it's after Trumas Meiser is out.
So,
and Meiser. Look, it's going to be like, let's call it, it'll be 9%, basically. After the Meiser, Trumas Meiser is removed, so you have 90%, so 1% of that, 10% of that. It'll be 9% of the original amount. Okay? It's Challah really comes after that. Should come after that. Okay? Because, so, Challah wouldn't be reduced first. Yep, very good. Mishnah Beis. Now, a similar case, but here you want to do a lot of things at once. Normally, as you spoke out a little bit, you're supposed to do all these hafrashas like way earlier on in the process, like in the granary and stuff, right? But here, for whatever reason, you didn't, and it wasn't, and you want to do this very fancy all-in-one-go hafrasha. So, you want to. So this is how you do it. I don't know why you don't want to, but that's how it goes. So Mishnah Beis, Harota lahafresh truma u'trumas meiser ka'achas. If you want to take truma, which is the truma gedola, this is, it hasn't even had that removed from it, and trumas meiser, the another 1% that goes to the kohen from the meiser. Now truma, you're supposed to give 2%, 1/50 of the original amount, the first thing. So that means now you're going to give essentially 3% of the total, right? Now there's missing words here, possibly, which is also challah. There'll be challah lurking around later on, so it's either 3 or it's 5. Then he's going to the Kohen, right? What do you do? Same story here. Notel echad mishloshim v'shalosh v'shlish. You take literally one part, 1/33 and a third, which is 3%. V'omer, another 3%, you say. If you remember my drawing, by the way, I had drawn it that there was 5 and I'm focusing on 3. Remember that? There's like 2 lurking off the edge, which could become challah later on. Probably easier just to join. Yeah, you'll imagine. So you take the 3% here, and I'll do it like this is our local in this way. So you take these 3%, okay? These 3 over here, and there's more local this way, and you say, Ech Mameya Masha Yeshkan, 1/100th of what I have here, Harei Zeh B'tzad Zeh Chulin. This thing over here, that's sitting over here, that's going to be chulin, not part of what I'm talking about, right? V'sha'ar, and of the rest of it, i.e. this part over here, the other 2, that's going to be called truma ala kol, for the whole loaf. Okay, so these 2 now are truma. Okay, now, umeya chulin shi'esh kan, and the 1/100th, I know it says the 100, but it means 1/100th, of the chulin that I have here, meaning this piece over here, right? Harei zeh shel b'tzad zeh meiser, this thing over here will be meiser, right? Ushar Meiser Samachla, and the rest, the other 9/10 of the Meiser will be over here, other 9 fingers worth, okay? So now these 10 over here will be the Meiser. Vezesh Asisi Meiser, and the first one I called Meiser over here, Asli Trumas Meiser. This is now the Trumas Meiser of the Kohen, right? Alav, for it, on behalf of those other, of all 10 of these pieces. So now I have 10 Meiser, the 9 of them I'm going to eat, the 10th one is Trumas Meiser, these are the Trumas, now you got 3 here. Vashar Chala, if these words are in, the rest, meaning this other 2 lingering around that I didn't mention up to now, that's why maybe it's taken out, are also Chala. So you'd have Trumas Meiser, Truma, and Chala, and then the other 95 are included, the mice which you can eat, and at the end, you have 10 more that are going to be, really 9 more like you pointed out, are going to be Meiser Sheni. So what do you do with that? Meiser Sheni, but Safona Obadromo, like the other Meiser Sheni, Muchel Olamos is on a coin. So you end up, in that case, you're going to end up eating all that. You'll end up eating the 95 or 97, depending on if you're taking Chala out or not. Okay, fine. And the last one, here we go. This Mishnah really takes a bit of lumdus. You got to think. It's our last Mishnah, and I want you to think for a second, because I saw some people really were befuddled by it yesterday. So think it through for a second. The halacha is, you're not allowed, if you have 2 batches of produce, and one of them has been tithed, and one of them has not been tithed, you're not allowed, and you don't know which is which, you're not allowed, or even if you did know which is which, you're not allowed to use one to redeem the tithes on the other. Right? They're 2 separate batches. They have different statuses. One is now called chulin and one is called tevel. One needs to be tithed and one doesn't need to be tithed. So you can't use one to exempt the other. In other words, you can't take another 10%, let's say whatever it is, from the chulin and say, this is the 10% I owe for the tevel. Or vice versa. Right? You can't. So. Sorry? Yeah, exactly. They're 2 separate distinct piles. So, now, this is a bit of lumdus here. Demai, each batch, if it came from 2 different suppliers, is, we don't know if it's tevel or if it's chulin. We just don't know. Right? Now, the rabbis didn't say, every demai that comes your way, you know, it's got an equal obligation to tithe it. In which case, what do you care? It's all demai, so tithe it as one single batch. That's not what they said. They said, there's a suffix here. We don't know what to do. So out of doubt, you'll have to take the certain hafrashas, the Trumas Meiser and the Meiser Sheni. But we're not saying that there's a blanket equal obligation on all demai. We're saying each batch of demai is its own separate doubt. So if you have 2 piles of demai and they're from 2 different suppliers, you can't use one to take a double portion, you know, and deem the other one also. Because you don't know. This one could be tevel or chulin. This one could be tevel or chulin. So you don't know. You can't. Each one has to be its own separate world of demai. Yeah? Yeah? Clear? Good. So that's what you got to know. What else is lurking here? So this Mishnah is dealing, like the first Mishnah is a case where the burden of hafrasha goes on the purchaser, okay? So he's buying from a baker, but for whatever reason the baker is selling demai, and you're obligated to now tithe it. Right? Like maybe he's selling, you know, to a distributor in large quantities, for example. Halukeach min anachtam, if you purchase demai bread from a baker, ma'aser min hachama alatzonenes, you're allowed from the same baker to use the 2 batches. One is chama, literally chama means warm, but it means fresh, the fresh bread. Today's bread, you could use to tithe both its obligation plus the tzonenes, the cold bread, meaning yesterday's bread also. You can use them interchangeably, right? Afilu mitfusin harbe, even if they look like 2 different kinds of breads. You know, one is a rye, I don't know, one is a long one and one is a fat one, right? So you could think maybe they're 2 different suppliers, 2 different kinds of breads. No. Rameh says, typical is for a particular baker to have a particular supplier, and either it's all good or it's all bad, but whatever it is, it's interchangeable. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree. Sha'ani Omer, because he says, Chitin shel emesh hayu mishel echad, v'shel hayom hayu mishel acher. Maybe the wheat from last night, the tzonenes wheat, right? Hayu mishel echad, it's from farmer A. Mishal Hayom, but today's wheat, Hayu Mishal Acher. Mishal Acher was from farmer B. You know, he got the best price in the day, and today he bought from a different supplier. So you can't, they're not interchangeable anymore. They're both demai, but each has its own unique suffix, but you can't exchange one on the other. Reb Shimon Oser, Betrumas Meiser. Reb Shimon really adds, not much of a machlokas here. He's saying, on top of what Reb Yehuda said, he says, when it comes to Trumas Meiser, indeed, you're right, you can't take like 2% from one and exempt, you know, the other. can't take, instead of like, if you have 200 grams of bread, you can't take 2 grams from one and exempt the other one. Each one has to have its own 1 gram taken for Trumas Meiser. However, Umatir b'chala, but he says you're allowed when it comes to chala to take, you know, the instead of 2% on each, you can take 4% from one when it comes to challah, because the obligation of challah only set in when the baker made the bread, when he made the dough. So even if it came from two different suppliers, so what? The challah obligation is unique, is equal to both loaves, because it came from one baker. And therefore, he adds, you're right, Rabbi Yehuda, you can't go take the trumas mice one another, but challah you could take one for both. All right, there you go. Okay.